Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 After. Thanks for hanging around with me. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Wherever you are, however you're listening, whenever you're listening, we're glad you're here. And I'm glad Ray Keating is here, too, because it wouldn't be nearly as much fun if he weren't. Ray is chief economist for the Small Business Survival Committee. He's also columnist for Newsday, which is a publication in the tri-state area. He's also the author of a number of books, including D.C. by the Numbers, New York by the Numbers, the U.S. by the Numbers, and his new book coming out is Milky Way Galaxy by the Numbers. Right, Ray?
Morning, Jim. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
I am going to get more creative on the book titles. Soon,
how's that Galaxy book coming along there? But you are working on a sports book, seriously, aren't you?
Yes, actually, tentatively titled Playing Politics. It'll be about the whole mix of government, politics, and sports.
And how the government subsidizes sports or any of that
stuff? Oh, yeah, subsidies and regulation and taxes and politics, it'll all be in there, yeah.
Are you going to include the deal that Mr. Steinbrenner got 10 or 15 years ago? I've forgotten what the deal was. Some kind of a shipping deal. Do you know about that one?
I think you had mentioned that to me once. I don't know.
You got to find that one.
All right.
That was a huge deal that it was like only for, it was so narrow, only he could take advantage of it.
You know, the deeper you get into that issue, it's just fascinating. I've been working on it for a few years now, and the degree that that government is intertwined with sports and subsidized sports, you know, everybody knows about the stadiums and arenas, although I don't think they know the full story, and I'll have that in the book, but in so many different areas, it's just, it really is mind-blowing.
Well, and of course, for small businesses, all those stadiums are good business because of all the vendors that are able to do business there. But what about, talking about subsidies, I'm going to change the subject just a minute.
Well, wait, the small businesses, I can't let you say that.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, when you look, you got to look at the economics of this. When you look at the economics of stadiums and arenas, there is no overall, you know, there is no boost to the local economy, to jobs or anything else. Dollars get basically rearranged. You know, people have only so many dollars, leisure dollars they can spend, and they get rearranged. So more often than not, what happens is the teams get those dollars, and local businesses, a lot of small businesses who used to get those dollars, wind up, you know, with the short end of the stick, and they also wind up paying higher taxes to subsidize the arenas and stadiums. So it's not a good deal for small businesses.
Now this sounds a little like blasphemy coming out of you, Ray, because I know how much you love baseball.
Oh, I'm a huge sports fan. Don't get me wrong.
A brand new stadium moving into an area, for example, let's say, all right, there's a rumor that the Montreal team will be moved to Washington, D.C.
Right.
And let's say they build a whole new stadium, because they'll probably build it in the south so that it doesn't compete with Baltimore. So they build a whole new stadium. You're saying that's going to be a net negative on the economy?
What's fascinating is all the independent studies. Get away from the bogus reports that the teams crank out and the politicians crank out. When you get to independent analysis, all of the independent studies, now I've been researching this for several years, and I've written on it, you know, not only for the book, but articles and studies. All the independent analysis shows that there's no overall net plus for in terms of economic growth, income growth, job growth. It's just not there. When you look at what's actually happened out there in the economy, and there's a lot of reasons for that. One of it is, you know, what we economists call the substitution effect, that dollars just kind of get moved around from one, you know, form of recreation to another. In other words, if you're a family and you only have so many dollars in the family budget for going out one night, if there isn't a new beautiful baseball stadium around, you're going to go do something else.
So what about the arts? Does this extend to the arts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no reason for government to be subsidizing professional sports, the arts, any of those things. That should be the ultimate decision.
Your point is not that they shouldn't build the stadium. Your point is that it shouldn't be government subsidized.
Exactly. Who should be making the final economic decision?
I want to make sure we get that out, because otherwise there are people going to be storming the state, the studio here.
You're absolutely right. What should be done, the final decision makers should be the consumers. They should decide the value of a baseball team in a stadium, not politicians.
And so if a stadium, if a baseball team can't make it on its own without local and state subsidies, it shouldn't be built.
You got it.
All right. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, from our good friend Ray the Curmudgeon Keating. He and I will be right back after these messages. 2010, I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't forget, this is Morning Radio Wise Guy Day. My day. Thank you very much for that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. She's got it.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the hour straight ahead, first half hour, I'm going to be answering some of the emails I've been getting in. And we've already responded to them, the questions, and by email, but I'm gonna talk about some of them on the air and give you some ideas about what we've been asking, what we said. That's coming up first up. And then after that, Gene Siciliano and I are going to talk about family business succession. What are you doing about that? Gene is a CPA and one of our financial experts. He's going to help us with that. Ray Keating is our guest. And Ray was, I'm glad we went to the break, folks, because we just stopped short of Ray telling us that there really wasn't a Santa Claus. And Ray, I'm glad we were saved by the commercials there.
You know, it's funny. I just heard you're going to answer your email on the air. I couldn't do that with my email that I get for my Newsday column.
I bet.
I know families listen. So.
Well, that's because you just stick your finger in so many eyes with your column.
Oh, I get the nastiest email you would not believe.
Of course, you're the token conservative in a pretty liberal organ there, the Newsday, right?
Yeah, Newsday. Well, Newsday's got a very liberal editorial line, and most of the other columnists are liberal. So, I'm kind of the conservative guy, along with Jim Pinkerton's on Newsday's pages as well.
Yeah, you're the token righty there. Ray, talk to us. One of the things that's a big deal right now that I know you've been thinking about lately is this movie that's coming out, The Day After Tomorrow. Isn't that the name of it?
Yeah, it's coming out, and it's coming out today. The Day After Tomorrow is coming out today. And the premise is linked to global warming, climate change. So this is Hollywood's 2 cents, if you will, or I guess $100 million plus entry into this discussion. And it's interestingly, I've been reading the reviews, and they have been the movie's pretty much been widely trashed as
really
as being bad acting, bad dialogue, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess the big thing, people want to go see the special effects, and that's supposedly, according to the film, you get dramatic climate change in a few days, and there are tornadoes in California, and New York City's underwater, and then frozen, et cetera, et cetera. But it has a clear, I'm going to see it later today, but from what I've read about it, it's got a pretty clear lefty environmental agenda. And it's just another example of, I think Hollywood's tilt to the left, but also, it's just, I think I'm trying to decide I'll decide this later today, which is worse, this movie or, the science and economics behind global warming and the mm-hmm. Kyoto Protocol and all these other things that we're facing. And it's not over in the U.S. We've got, President Bush wisely pulled us out of the Kyoto Protocol.
Right.
Which would have raised energy prices through the roof mm-hmm. if we had gone through with that and accomplished little or nothing on the environmental front. But we still have senators, specifically Senator McCain from Arizona and Senator Lieberman from Connecticut, who are pushing basically a domestic version of Kyoto, and that is going to come up probably within the next month for another vote in the Senate.
Well, I do believe that the global warming is a reality, Ray. I actually believe that, and so what? See what? Because I'm remembering. I mean, I'm not remembering, but I'm thinking about Og and Nog, on the glacier in southern Indiana, you know, 10,000, 12,000 years ago, when you know the ice cap went all the way down into northern, all the way down into Tennessee, actually. And I'm imagining Og and Nog sitting around a fire, and Grog walks up and says, "Put that fire out! What are you guys doing? Can't you see what's happening here? You know, you're melting the ice cap. You know, yeah, we got global warming. It's been going on for 12,000 years."
Well, you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, there's obviously climate change is a constant, if I can say that, and you've got, you know, over tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years, you've had dramatic changes in different directions. The question is, you know, I mean, and the question is what?
I mean, how do you think the American Indians, the Native Americans, came here from Asia through a land bridge? That means, right, you know, because all the water was sucked up into a glacier.
Yeah, and they, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting to look at this issue from, you know, several perspectives, economic, science, et cetera. But, you know, you have to give credit to Al Gore and his cohorts on the left on this issue, because they have made, you know, tremendous headway in making this idea of man-made global warming.
Yeah. But, Ray, don't you think that there's some, I mean, we can't deny that fossil fuels has contributed to some greenhouse effect. I mean, we can't. I'm not saying that. I mean, I think that there is some element of that. You can't deny that, can you?
Sure, you can.
You do? Okay.
I think.
You don't. You don't think mankind, in the way it uses fossil fuels and all the other stuff, the brown cloud, the Asian brown cloud that pops up every year over the South Pacific. You don't think that man-made influences have affected global temperature?
No, I don't think so. I don't. I think when you look at the data itself, it doesn't hold up. When you look at, you know, the numbers that the environmentalists quote in terms of the past century, in terms of the increase in temperature, that happened in the early part of the last century before we saw a dramatic increase in development and industrialization around the world. And when you look at the latter part of, you know, more recent years, you know, it depends on which temperature measure you want to use.
He's such an easygoing guy. I couldn't bait him at all. I was hoping to get him excited. Stand by, folks. We're going to take a quick break. It's 10 till. We'll be right back with our good friend Ray Keating. He's the chief economist for the Small Business Survival Committee.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Lysingame, the Small Business Advocate. Ray Keating is our guest. He's chief economist for the Small Business Survival Committee. Ray, give us your website there, SBSC.
www.sbsc.org.
And tell us what we'll find when we get there.
You can find all sorts of great stuff. We rate how members of Congress voted on small business issues. We
have the scorecard.
Right. We have the Small Business Survival Index, where we rank the states in terms of how friendly or unfriendly their policy climate
which are. Is making Ray into a kind of a power broker, by the way, folks, around the world.
And actually, we were talking about, you know, global warming in Kyoto and domestic versions of Kyoto. If you go on there, you can see our latest fact of the week talks about Putin's decision to endorse Kyoto. And
yeah, he did that recently.
What that means,
this
and
week,
also, yeah, also a little got a recent column about the movie and the issue itself. So there's a lot of good stuff on there.
Ray, back to this Kyoto thing. I was very happy that the United States didn't participate in that. I felt this was an attack on what would ultimately wind up being basically making the America disadvantaged against other countries.
You're absolutely right.
I felt about it, and so I thought it was a bad plan. But Ray, you know, we do have to do something. And I'm not so much concerned about global warming as I am about the price of energy. I don't see the price of gas coming down very much in the future at all, and to add to add something like the Kyoto restrictions on it would just make prices go that much higher, and it put a lot of small businesses out of business.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, Kyoto, what's interesting is, across the board, the economic analysis of going down the path of a Kyoto Protocol, which essentially what it would do, just so people understand, is under that treaty, the U.S. would have had to cut its emissions, primarily we're talking about carbon dioxide, to 7% below 1990 levels
right. By
the year, I believe it was 2012. That would be a dramatic, dramatic shift, and it would require a dramatic increase, basically taxes and so on, restrictions on energy use. So you're absolutely right. And across the board, you know, the analysis showed what that cost would go up dramatically, and you're absolutely right. That would be a major hit on the economy.
And the developing countries wouldn't have to comply with it, but the developed countries would. But the United States, in my opinion, is the only one with a court system where we would actually be the only ones who would truly be made to comply with it.
Yeah, now you're right on all counts. Developing countries would not have to be involved, and it would...
They would sign it, and they'd benefit from it, but they wouldn't have to comply with it.
Right. And
Merry Christmas.
The U.S. Senate, actually, in June of 1997, specifically told the Clinton administration by a vote of 95 to nothing,
right,
said to oppose the Kyoto Protocol if, number one, it excluded developing nations, and, number two, it would cause harm to the U.S. economy. It would do both, obviously, but nonetheless, Clinton administration went ahead and signed on. And as I said earlier, fortunately, President Bush withdrew our support for that. But again, you know, it's an issue that doesn't go away. And now we've got Senators Lieberman and McCain pushing basically a domestic version of Kyoto, where it would cap. They're looking to cap CO2 emissions in their bill, and it would be very, very costly for the U.S. economy and clearly for small businesses.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And that's it already worries me about what worries me, Ray, is small businesses already weren't prepared for the level of cost increases for fuel that we've had right now. Most of us didn't budget for $2 a gallon gasoline, 6 months ago when we were doing our 2004 budgets. And anything that would increase that even more, we're already having trouble with pricing power. Anything that would cause us to have to increase our prices is going to be met by not being competitive. And I think it's bad business for small business.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And think about the current environment, which I disagree with you, though, in the sense that I don't think this is a permanent thing. I think we see, we'll see the price fluctuations, and I think we will see a period where the price of oil comes back down from its recent highs, and we'll see much more reasonable prices.
Below $30?
I think eventually. I don't know if we'll see that within the next few months, but, yeah, I think we'll see that. I know I saw a representative, I think, from Saudi Arabia on CNBC recently, and he was talking $23 a barrel.
So yeah, they want we'll 22 see. To 28, I think, is what they want.
Yeah.
Ray, I'm going to have to wrap it up. Thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
It was great, Jim. Thanks.
We'll do it again real soon. Ray Keating, ladies and gentlemen, Chief Economist for the Small Business Survival Committee. That's sbsc.org. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.